I want you to feel safe right now.
I'm not going to do it.
To attempt.
I'm not going to do it. Like, that's the boundary. That's where I draw the line. Like, I refuse to on command do a Jennifer Coolidge impression.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and God, am I excited that we have Joe Hedges on the podcast this week, one of the hosts of the hugely popular Good Children podcast. They've just blown up, and for good reason. It's such a good podcast. They're such great hosts, and Joe's episode this week, I'm just over the moon. They also had Julia Fox in their pod recently, so if you don't listen already, which I'm sure most of you do, but if not, that description is, or that link is in the show notes, and I just want to get into the episode straight away. If you don't have a five-star review on our podcast page, leave her now. Maybe you can even write what you like about armpits, or simply, I love Pitt. If you need inspiration, look out for ticket sales for the June 15th LA show, the June 29th New York show. If you want to watch the entire show from last month in LA, head to Gay Ass Podcast's Patreon. That's patreon.com/gayasspodcast for only $5 a month, and you get ad-free episodes there. Hope you enjoy. Go, Joe Hedges is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Big deal in the gay ass uni. Joe, thank you. And let's just say it out loud. You look gorgeous right now.
Stop. Thank you so much.
Are you sitting in front of a window?
I'm sitting in front of a window. I'm at my parents' house on Long Island, which is what my journey has been for the past 2 months. And the real benefit is that, like, there is a large white table and a giant window. So I get, like, a bounce.
The Long Island
all
bounce.
All my Zooms during COVID. It's the Long Island bounce, and it works. Like, I'm very disappointed that I've never found this lighting in any other capacity except this window.
Honey, there's something about New York City that you cannot have a bounce from your window. Unless I feel like your tax bracket is other than ours. However, the Long Island bounce, fuck the Long Island sound, honey.
It's the Long Island bounce. It really is.
Well, I want to wish you a happy 1 year, Annie, of the Good Children Pod. It's just a big deal. And I want to tell you that, like, huge fan over here.
Thank you very much. It's been quite a whirlwind. This is like the second podcast I've ever done, so, you know, I'm really still brand new to this space.
I just got chills. Like, thank you for letting Gay Ass Podcast be that place.
Thank you for asking me to come on. Like, absolutely.
Are you kidding? It's an honor. Well, then I just want to get into so much, because the questions I have are nonstop, and I hope you're okay with that.
Oh, I just said yesterday I love being asked a question. It's like my favorite thing.
That's your love language, is being asked a question.
Talking about myself, yeah.
Honestly, though, not same for me, which I'm meaning is same. Question number one is, thank you for posting a Mother's Day video of you and Andrew with footage from, I'm going to say, you were age 11, 12?
We were definitely too old to be behaving the way that we were behaving. Like, that much is for certain. I was watching it just now, and I was like, we were like other kids were like definitely like smoking and having sex, and we're like sitting in my room with a blanket behind us making up an improv Mother's Day performance.
Listen, I think the Julia Foxes were smoking weed, and the Joe Hedges and the Eric Williamses were
creating art,
doing the hero's journey on VHS. You and Andrew, first of all, of course, the podcast, for I'm sure everybody listening knows, but it's like about your best friendship of what, 22 years. The question number one is, when you're doing all these videos as a very closeted child with your friend and with yourself, who is editing them, and what are you editing on? I want to get a glimpse into time in history.
Oh my God, this is amazing. So I was editing them. I, to this day, I'm editing all of the podcasts. So it's, nothing has changed there.
You're the logistical girl.
Exactly. I just called out Andrew for posting a video where I'm cropped out of it, and he replied by saying, you know, I don't know how to resize videos. Like, that's where we're at in terms of our collaboration. But back in the day, I think I was using Windows Movie Maker. That was a big one.
Shout out.
Yeah, wow. Huge. And unfortunately, I didn't know how to save things. So, like, a lot of the actual, like, movies that were made were, like, project files that to this day I can't open. But the ones that are exported are the ones that are left. And then I also got into One True Media, which is a really deep cut. I'm not sure.
One True Media?
It was like this online editing platform that had this like green logo that would appear before every video. And like it's burned into my brain. And then one day in like the late 2010s, I feel like it shut down. But I had the chance to like download everything that was hosted on it. So I have all of those. But they begin with like a One True Media. And like that's the one.
Good thing you know how to edit that One True Media out if you so choose. Right, exactly. I want you to feel very supported in keeping it if that is your dream.
It does feel like it's important historical context for like the other like 25 gay kids who are using that platform to edit their videos.
Hey, representation matters.
Exactly.
I also am, I'm jealous of all the footage that you've been able to get in touch with, because I do know that there are, obviously this is an audio podcast, but I'm holding up my fingers like 3 inches apart from each other. I think the tapes that I filmed my stuff on were this big and like a smaller camera. Yes. That would probably, you'd have to go to a wizard to get them to pull it and make it a digital file. Also, I'd have to fully excavate my parents' house to find it. But there is some, I don't think it's as Kenny Ortega-ish as yours were, but I do think that some of the videos I created, like the one that pops in my mind that would be a terror to post on the internet, is me singing Clay Aiken's Invisible in full length khakis as if I was doing music video with my now very queer friend who we've both come out to be. Just gaylinas.
Anyone who is performing Clay Aiken as a child, like that is, I think Clay Aiken was a huge gateway drug. Like I remember paying a little too close attention to Clay Aiken, being like, who's this?
Which isn't it such a bummer that for someone with such an angelic voice, he became kind of problematic, right? I paid attention too much recently, but I think he did.
I don't remember. I remember there was a political era for him, which I am either way obsessed with, like the fact that he got to the point where he got into politics. And then I remember like a Jack Frost era where I don't know what that was.
Referring to his hair or like, to a character
he was
that he
like doing the character of Jack Frost for something at some point. Like
I can't wait to research Clay Aiken's Jack Frost era.
I hope like nothing shows up. I'm just making it up. Like unfortunately my brain does like store information like that, so like I definitely know that that happened. And I know recently that he went back on tour with Ruben Studdard, which is crazy.
I did see that. And it is crazy, but it's also, you have to support a girl's need for cash.
Oh,
and
yeah.
To die. It's kind of like the Jonas Bros, which, by the way, I know they're very talented and they deserve the acclaim and the fame, but they also were not famous for quite some time. And then dipped back into the pool and now they're, honey, swimming.
They like gaslit everyone into thinking that they were as relevant as they always were in a way that I respect.
And here they are, like relevant.
They're
as
like
ever.
Icons of the industry now. Like, how did that happen?
It's honestly a gorgeous examination of reinvention and delusion.
Two of my favorite things.
Two of my favorite things. Being asked questions is the third.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And the fourth is lying. Again, this all adds up.
Wait, this is all adding up to why you have a podcast.
Exactly.
What is the percentage of things you've said that are lies?
It's difficult because sometimes I like literally lose track of it. I do think that like with the help of therapy, I have been able to kind of calibrate what's the truth. But like, I would say from the ages of 13 to 24, every other statement was a little bit fabricated. And
yeah, instead of two truths and a lie, it was like, these are lies.
It was like three lies and a maybe was really what I was playing.
Three lies and probably another lie, but like on a good day, it's the truth.
Three lies and the last one's a little bit made up. Just a little.
But wait, that sounds like they're all lies. I do think that the Clay Aiken drug was very much coursing through my veins. Mm-hmm. But I think that what really awoken in me the like idea of trauma was when Clay Aiken came out, and then I went back to the album that I devoured and heard him using she pronouns about the person he was in love with. Like,
yeah,
you're literally
really
listening
dark.
To a man lie.
Right.
Yeah. You're like, and then I'm picturing him in the studio going, what you doing tonight? I wish I could be a fly on your wall. And then it's like, well, there's no she pronouns there, but the fly, he's the fly looking at a female. And then
there's a sibilant S that comes through sometimes. I'm just like, what was it like for him to leave the studio being like, I sounded great, but I'm also not being genuine?
Yeah, out. I would love to ask him that question one day. I would ask him that before I even got into politics. That'd be the first one.
Truly.
I think. Because
it's honestly like a politician needs to be careful about the things they've lied about. And honey, right. Clay lied.
Well, no wonder he was a politician. He was ready to
That's
make
true.
That move. It's the natural pivot.
Now it all tracks.
It's the George Full Santos circ. Blueprint.
Which I get a little
What's your Santos?
Well, my Santos stance, my Stansos.
Your Santos.
My George Stansos is that he, on one side of it, is, of course, a horrible person who is getting what is due because right. of the lies. And, like as a Jew myself, him claiming that, I think he said he had, like, Holocaust relatives, right. something like that. Which, like, that to me is, of course, like, I'm angry. I'm glad you're going to be hopefully accused guilty of all these things. And then the other side of it, I see gay people being, like, slay mother. And part of it is camp because of the image of him, like, with all of the news cameras.
It's
and it's giving,
so
like,
good.
MK, and it's also that is camp, and so it's like, well, where do I fall? I'm still right. finding my George Stansos.
But I think that's
where do you fall?
I feel as if I could probably agree with you. I think there's a darker undertone to the fact that this all happened, where I'm like, where? How did he get to this point? Like, also, I'm pretty sure he's a Long Islander, if not like he like hails from. Like, he has ties to the island, which I do think is
right.
almost makes more sense. And, like, yeah, this all tracks. I just find anyone who's willing to lie so brazenly really entertaining. Like, there's something about that where I'm like, I have to hand it to him when the lies are like the drag
well,
lie.
Well, that's the gray area.
The drag lie was when I was like, I'm obsessed with this man.
Let's be clear then. This is a great point, is that the drag lie is our bread and butter. The fact that an out gay man who is a politician is saying, no, that wasn't me. And then I was just having fun, when then scores of people on the island were like, honey, you were not only a drag queen, you were a bad one for a long time.
It really just like, it really tracks to me in a lot of ways. I feel like I know a lot of people who could have ended up a George Santos, like if the
yes,
cards were
that
played
is true.
Differently.
And gone unchecked. Yes. George does not have good friends. George
exactly.
does not have good friends.
People called him out. He could have gotten away with it.
Yeah, he's surrounded by yes men, women, and people who said, wait, what was his drag name? What was his drag persona? I'm forgetting.
I have literally no idea. That's something that I have. I missed that. I haven't been able to log into Twitter since January. So, like, my knowledge on news is a little bit shaky. And that's, to me, that's the news I'm missing. Is what George
wait, said. That is the news you're missing. But now I'm curious, because I've been dabbling with the idea of going off of Twitter. Has your life changed for the better or worse at all?
It's changed for the better, absolutely. I would say I need to like read a newspaper. Like, I need to get back in touch with what's happening. Like, that's the downside. Like, I'm getting my news yeah. through like the chance that like TikTok feeds me something, and like that's scary, and that's a slippery slope. However,
that is a slippery slope.
Besides that, I like literally, I was like, what did I use that app for? Like, I have forgotten its served purpose in my life. Occasionally, I will feel like just the need to tweet, where I'm like, this thing I just thought of is so good. So I will just like write it down in my notes app, and then it just lives there. And like,
which honestly, though, that could become a video.
Exactly. That's my thought. And like, maybe I can take these ideas and bring them to like TikTok, which would be really good for me. The one I wrote down yesterday, though, was like, I think it said take Italian classes IRL, which was actually more of like, I actually need to do that is my lesson. But I was like,
well, especially because the Julia Fox clip going viral of Gabagool.
Everyone being illiterate in a group. It's great. I feel really
the illiteracy
really
is going by.
We set her up, honestly. Like, she did not deserve what she got. She did not know what we were saying, and she just repeated it back. And now people are like, she doesn't know Italian. She's an idiot. Yeah, it's gorgeous. The way she says it is beautiful. According to the thousands of Italians in her comments, it's wrong. As I've had
that
to,
is
like,
what's devastating too, is that she lived in Italy for 2 years, and then but also that is why Julia is because of, and I mean this with deep respect and love, is that she says it herself, sometimes your delusion gets you to the places you want to be. And that's how she got to where she is, because she is talented, because she is a fashion iconista, but she's also not on this planet fully. And we love her for that.
Yeah. She seems to be making it up as she goes along and like seeing what works. And like, that is to me, like genuinely inspirational. I'm like, I need to do that more.
Well, when she said on your literal podcast, I think more people should just go for what they want and kind of figure it out as you go. And like, not enough people are essentially utilizing that delusion to achieve their dreams. And when I heard her say that, I was like, fuck, I need to do that more. Mm-hmm. But then I realized like, I am doing that way more now than I used to, but I think we all can do it more, except for I'm sure there's a minority of the population. And we could probably even name some people off mic who probably are leaning too much into their delusion and could be scaled back. But that's the exception, not the rule.
I agree. I completely agree. I think that delusion in large quantifiable qualities that's still within reign is the perfect thing you could possibly be.
The balance, the Clay Aiken balance, we'll call it.
It is the Clay Aiken balance. It's because you can either be a Clay or you can be a George. Like those are the ways you could pan out.
The two paths. That's what George Frost, is that his name? Robert Frost? That's what Robert Frost was going for with the two paths less traveled. It's the George path and the Clay Aiken path.
And that is actually who Clay Aiken was portraying as Jack Frost. It all comes back to the Jack Frost interpretation.
Wow. Full Cirque du Soleil. Well, listen, since we're going full circle, I need to ask you, Joe Hedges, the famous podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I've weirdly been asked this question a lot lately. I feel like it's like it comes up frequently, and I have been given ample time to consider the reality of it. And I used to always say it was Zac Efron in High School Musical. I was like, that was the one, because I was always like, I was angry seeing him. I was like, I think 11 when that came out, and I was like mad when I saw him.
Was the anger like wanting it? What was the anger stemming from?
I think it was love. I think I was misplacing an emotion. I think it took me a long time to realize that. However, I think shockingly, the whole time I was looking at Zach, but really it was Corbin Blue who was next to Zach in those movies. And there's a specific scene in the first High School Musical where Corbin Blue lifts up his arms and he has hairy armpits. And it was like the first time I've ever seen a hairy armpit on screen. And from that day forward, it was locked in.
Joe. I'm putting my hands in prayer because you've landed on something that is holy.
That is it a hairy pit?
And that is the love of a hairy pit.
Oh, yeah, mean, of course.
And Corbin Blue being your gateway pit.
Exactly. And everyone has a gateway pit. And mine happened to be Corbin's.
Everyone has a gateway pit. Let's go around the room. I guess I'll go first and ask what my gateway pit was.
Who was yours?
I think I'm going to say it's between two people that I can honestly think of from a young age. One is going to be Justin Timberlake's cover of Rolling Stone. In my mind, there was Pitt, but it might have just been Happy Trail. All I remember is that his skin was golden. There was like a glistening, and I remember seeing Happy Trail, but I think there maybe was Pitt.
Is he wearing like a knit top? Is there
that
like...
sounds right, but he also might be shirtless.
Okay, that also would make more sense then, yeah.
Because I remember seeing like some freckles, and I was like, oh my God, he's perfectly imperfect. Yeah. And then I thought I saw pit hair. If that is factually incorrect, then it was definitely Jake Gyllenhaal.
That makes sense. Yeah, these are all really logical answers.
Yeah, there was something about that photo shoot that I'm sure many people can picture right now. There's like kind of like, oh my God, wait, no, I'm conflating him with Chris Evans too. Fuck, there's a lot of good pit.
Yeah, there is.
There's a Chris Evans photo shoot full of like blue and green lights that was like a very old magazine spread.
I'm familiar.
Came out for... Yeah, so so that's one of the pit stories. Jake Gyllenhaal, just in general, I remember there was a movie with Anne Hathaway called Love and Other Drugs, and he showed full butt, which was really big.
I'm sure.
But I think just body hair connections as a... Because like you are also a hairy king, and I think that... It's something that I'm curious about for you that I'm actually, because, you know, we're what, seven? I'm 33, you're 26, yes?
Yes.
So we're 7 years apart. And like, I think we have obviously so much crossover and similarities, but I think that's enough difference in age that the relationship to body hair could have been different when you were growing up. So I want to know, when you were, let's say, high school, early college, had the tides turned and you weren't very self-conscious about it, or were you still like self-hatey like me?
I listened to your episode with Ryan O'Connell about Rob Delaney, and this conversation made it got me thinking about exactly this. I feel like, I don't know. I've always been very confused by people who were like anti-body hair, like forever. I was always like a little bit thrown off by it because I was like, what am I missing here? Like I was never anti it. And I feel like the people I was surrounded by also weren't. Like, I mean, like, again, I grew up with like Andrew, like that was my main point of context for like anything gay. So it wasn't like we were both like hairless twinks. Like that was never like a part of our journey. I remember up until like actually maybe 2 years ago, though, I was like shaving my shoulders. So there is some like, and I was like having Andrew shave my shoulders in the bathroom is what was happening. And I think that,
of course,
I feel like there's an age you turn where like you stop trying to look like that certain way of like that youth, like where now I'm like, okay, like I can like accept that I look like a man and like I can be like a hairy man. But there was a time when I was like, I need to still appear young.
Oh, I get that. And I also think that you care less about the messages that we're given about looking young is hotter, looking this way is better. Like, I think I wish I had an Andrew of just like the mirroring of like, yeah, I think we're both looking this way and that should be fine. Because I think what I grew up around was like just constant images of hairlessness. That like, and also I think it's like a part of where I grew up and like the time, whatever it was, like it's been a journey for me. But when I see another Harry King like yourself, I'm like, I'm always, and especially because you're younger, I think it might partly be that even the 7 year difference, like there is more of an acceptance or less of like a ew gross than when I was younger, which like never want to make us feel like we're on two different parts of the earth or this journey, but like I think the hairiness might have a slight difference in a very good way for you.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, I think Game of Thrones came out when I was a senior in high school, and I do think genuinely Game of Thrones did something for body hair culturally, where people were
can you tell me why? Because I didn't watch it and I'm so sorry.
I only watched some of it. I watched like the first season or two, but they were like all hairy. Like it was like about like, you know, like it was like hairy like woodsmen, like beards, long hair, like hairy chests. And I feel like that, I remember when that show came out, like everyone had a beard the next month. Like that was like the time I was trying to grow my first beard and I was like, it's not working.
Wow.
So I feel like that like set the tone where it was like, at the very least, there was a portion of the world that was leaning that way. And I was like, this is definitely what I'm going to prefer over like the opposite.
I love that.
But I did get my back waxed one time, and that was a crazy experience.
Oh, I did it more than one time. And by the way, I think I did it so many times that now it actually changed.
There's less
the change. Yeah, there's just because I also like, I started doing that late high school and in college.
That's
like,
crazy.
I was mortified.
When did you start getting like a back hair moment?
Probably like late high school. And the thing is, it's hilarious about it now, is that I am positive there was probably next to nothing on my back. But because I had probably seen something, I was so panicked that I was going to be called the village leper.
Right.
That I immediately went to do that and to get it waxed. And like, and then, and so it's funny because now I look at my back and like, it is what it is, Santa. It's like, I'm not ashamed of it. It's like, and of course I'm on the internet seeing so many different types of bodies and like coverage. I'm like, okay, what I have is what I have and it's great. And like, I accept it. And also seeing people more embrace what they have too has been, cause I think that's been one of the benefits of the internet and about like Twitter porn and just like everything is like seeing, being exposed to so much difference. And I think that's like, if we may be optimistic about the internet, that's a good thing.
I agree. I feel like that actually, like, I kind of think a lot of, because a lot of our listeners are like in the like college age phase of life still, which I think is still probably one of the most difficult parts of like coming to terms with who you are.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of like this commentary that's like, well, I don't feel accepted by the gay community because of like what I look like, which is so valid, like 150%. But I think that like I felt that for a while until I looked around and looked a little bit deeper than like the little veneer of what I thought like the gay community was. And I was like, oh, like people look like me. People like act like me. Like there's bodies that look like mine. There's like people most in some way, like you'll find some group of people that celebrate exactly what you look like. And like that was like I was like, oh, like I'm not for this particular subsection, but also why would I want to be there if that's not where I'm supposed to be?
And I think that's a very spot on observation about just being gay in general, but also kind of like being human, which is that the part of the shitty thing of growing up is not knowing A, who you are. So then B, not knowing who you want to surround yourself with, and then feeling out of place because you don't know that. But then I feel like the more you get in touch with yourself and you're like, okay, actually this is what I am and this is Gorgine, and then you start to realize how it feels to be around the people that celebrate that.
Right.
And I think that that's why I love your podcast so much, is because it's the same thing about any good podcast, that when you listen to it, you feel like you're listening to your own people and your own friends. And I think it's also like an aspirational thing where you want to be a part of that group. And I think just like snaps to good children.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that's our goal. I mean, I feel like that's like we're kind of doing it for like what we didn't have. And like it's just like,
yeah,
that's like I feel like what everyone wants is like to kind of speak to like your younger self, or like if I could have like listened to someone say I was normal when I was like 20, I would have been so grateful. Like I needed to hear that.
So
and, like,
grateful.
It had to be me who had to say it to myself ultimately, but like that, like at least someone did. But I'm like, if I can do that for one other person, that's a dream.
At
like that's
least
the goal.
Someone did. Well, then, so then I do want to ask, speaking of your someone saying that you are normal, I do think it is normal to videotape yourself doing Kenny Ortega-esque choreography.
Yes,
as
course.
A child. Were you, as a kid, what did Joe want to do as an adult? Like, were you like, I want to be a Broadway girly, I want to be a movie choreographer, I want to be Corbin Bleu, I want to be Zac Efron? What did he want?
I think that he always want, like, my thing since I was a kid was director. Like, I wanted, like, from sixth grade, I remember doing a project on Steven Spielberg, and I was like, this is who I want to be when I grow up. Like, I was like, I want to make movies, I want to write scripts, and I want to, like, make things. Like, that was it. So it was convenient growing up next to Andrew, who wants to be, like, an actor. I was like, okay, I'm going to direct you in my things.
Yeah.
But that was, like, the main goal. I was like, I just want to make things. I would, like, get home from school and write scripts every day, like, on Microsoft Word, like, tabbing and like indenting to make it look like a real script. Yeah. Like not knowing how to do it. So that was like the, I think that was always like the long-term dream, was to be able to make movies. Mm-hmm. And then I got rejected from NYU and I was like, I'm done. I was like, I'm out, I'm over this. And then
you're like, that answers that.
I was like, I guess I'm doing business, and went to business school for a year until I was like, oh, I am failing. And then went to like studied journalism and screenwriting and became a journalist for a second. But that was like the goal since I was literally like 11 was director.
Are you still, is that still the dream?
Yes. I like, now it's been diluted. Now I'm like, oh, there's other avenues I could like explore. But I think that like if I end up directing things as my main job, like that would be a dream come true. Like that would be,
which I think is the beauty of what you're doing and what like the opportunities of the time we're living in, is that like for all intents and purposes, you are a writer, you are a creator, you are a director, right? But I think that the fact that you're going in this avenue, it's just the way you're opening the doors. Did I think that podcasting was going to be the thing for me? No, but what's really weird about it is that I have a literal memory of walking out of an audition for some probably $3 a week musical theater job when I was like 22 years old. And I looked at my phone and I saw that someone I know had started a podcast. And of course, this was over 10 years ago.
Right.
And I was like, okay. I was like, this is so stupid.
Yeah.
We have the radio for a reason.
and podcasting is not going to take off. And then as the years went by and it was, and people were starting to create more, and, you know, I went to college with Matt Rogers and Bone Yang, and when they did Lost Culture Resources, I was like, okay, no, it's funny, but it's like, is it going to go anywhere? And then I started to see that it was. And then this seed in my tummy started to grow bigger and bigger year after year. That was like, you would actually probably really enjoy doing a podcast. But then, of course, I was like, there's no chance.
Right.
Why would anyone listen? Matt and Bowen can do it better than anyone else.
Yeah.
Why would I do this? And then, of course, the pandemic happened and I had an existential crisis. And here we are today. So I think that it's like, you as an 11, 12-year-old knew you wanted to create and direct.
Yeah.
And you are doing that. But I think that it's like you're following your gut and your passion into one avenue. And then like doors are flying open. And I think that's kind of the cool thing about creating right now, even though it's even harder, I think, to like make an impression because there are so many options. But once right. you like lean in and go for it and live with your truth like you're doing, it is limitless.
That was a stunning speech. I'm kind of moved from it. That was gorgeous. Wow.
Thank you so much for
Thank
saying
you.
That. I got chills about you. Your praise gave me chills. So like, clearly I am sick.
No, we're like chilling each other back and forth is what's happening.
Which honestly, thank you for this.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember like really wanting to start a podcast. I started like five in my life. Like I have like recorded like five different shows and never posted them because I was like, this isn't funny.
Wow.
Like that happened a few times. It was always with like a different friend at the time. Like the friend I was seeing the most
you
in my life.
Friends.
I kind of did.
Sure.
The one who made the most sense always was Andrew, but we weren't in proximity to each other because he was in college and then he lived in Boston and I was in New York. And then once we moved in together, one thing led to another, but it was like the amount of times I like wish I started one 5 years ago, because I'm like, this would have made my life so much easier if I had just like committed to the bit much longer ago. I don't think I'd be ready, you know, to share my full truth
same,
5 years
same,
ago. Like
same,
I'm happy
same,
that it,
same.
The timeline works. But yeah, like I think the seed in the belly analogy is like so true. Like there are things that I have like deeply wanted where I'm like, I need to just accept it. Like, I need to just actually do this thing instead of thinking that someone is doing it better.
Exactly. And then, or also wondering what will happen if I fail. That's what I tend to do a lot of like, well, of course the world's going to explode, right? And of course my therapist is like, you know, what's funny is no, you're actually still going to eat the same honey bunches of oats the next morning.
Right.
You might put in an oatmeal square because you're trying to really make the honey bunches last longer, and you're gonna pour your milk like you always the cereals. I eat cereal every day. It's my religion, and I think that I'm still gonna eat my cereal in the morning.
Yeah, and like also it's like nobody else cares but you, like especially with the internet. I think the beauty of failing on the internet is like failing means nobody saw it, which is like
fail today, gone tomorrow.
Yeah, like nobody saw the failure, so it's like okay, like there's definitely like ways where you get exposed and then you're like embarrassed. Like I think that's part of it, but like if people are seeing things, it's a success regardless of what they're saying. Like that's
and by the way, public embarrassment of people seeing it when you've posted the videos of you trying to clap at the right time behind Nicole Richie. What was the award show that was happening at?
I can't believe all I do is like post embarrassing things to the internet. Like it's really become
it is
the brand.
So if anybody hasn't watched it, it's basically you like stare smiling into cam. Nicole Richie's like, and after the break, we're gonna boo 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 boo, and then you keep gasping to clap, and you realize it's the wrong time, but then you recover, look back into the camera. It's so earnest.
It is like sickeningly earnest. It's like that was something that I was at. It was VH1's You Oughta Know. It wasn't even a like award show. It was like a music concert of like up and coming artists.
Of course. That was my next guess. You Oughta Know on VH1. Of course.
They had like great artists. Like I think that like it was like Tove Lo's debut. It was a bunch of people's debut. Like it was kind of nuts. Sam Smith was
there. You were
there. I was there for like the start of a few iconic careers. But yeah, that was just an example. I think I was so excited to be next to Nicole Richie, and like prior to the cameras rolling, she like spoke to us and like took a picture with me, and I was like, this is it, because all I was doing at that point in my life was like chasing proximity to fame. I was like, I just want to be near famous people. Like, it was like, I would go into the city and be like, I am going to like run into Billy Eichner. And like, I would. Like, that was the other side of it. Like, it would still, it was crazy enough that it would work. Like, I'd be like, today is
would
the
you
day.
Say hi to, would you say hi to these people?
I did stop Billy during Billy on the Street, which was also a scary moment for me. I have like crippling social anxiety, but when it comes to like saying hello to someone who is famous, it goes away. I'm like, yeah, this is my job. Wow. Like, I have to do this.
How was Billy?
He was in the middle of working, and he was like, I can take one picture, but I'm working. And I was like, absolutely. Got my picture, and that was like best moment of my entire life. Because like, he
you're
was
like, absolutely get back to set. Like, you're immediately go run. In the industry.
Yeah, no, that was the feeling. But that was also the energy with Nicole. I was just so excited to be on camera next to Nicole Richie, and I think that like the brain couldn't possibly function. And those videos are recorded from my high school ex-girlfriend's mom is recording those
naturally. You had an ex-girlfriend?
Yeah, we dated for 8 months in high school. We're still in touch to this day. Is 8 months like
it's a long time.
Yeah,
it's a long time for a closeted gay person to be in a relationship that has not imploded or exploded. How did the 8 months last that long?
You know, it was just like we were just hanging out. Like, we would like go see Frozen together and get like Cold Stone. Like, it was like,
oh well,
it was,
listen,
it was
what
just...
what you just described is my experience with all of my girly friends in high school. Just we were not pretending to be in a relationship. So I love that for you.
It was just a really good friend who like we had a label and occasionally would like kiss in school.
You can feel free to like say or not say as much as you feel comfortable, but with this girlfriend, was there a base farther than kissing?
No. It never got beyond.
That's why it lasted so long.
Exactly. I think she was afraid. I was deeply afraid. So we just like hung out.
Bonded by the fear,
and then bonded by Nicole Richie.
That's a given. That's a given for all of us. We're all bonded by Nicole Richie. Truly. When you get down to it. Well, I want to tell you that my relationship with famous people right now is, I think when you meet someone who is famous and you can tell they're a genuinely passionate, good person, that to me is the ecstasy. But I feel like when I now see a famous person, I almost like... I'm skeptical of how they are as a human outside of the TV, outside of the internet. Yeah. And I bring this up because I met a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills last night, Sutton Strack, the Book Club 2 screening.
Yes, I saw this Instagram. And, yes, I'm not a Real Housewives gay, which is like...
It's, and that is okay, and I truly support that for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to change my ways.
But someone who has watched... It's okay. I know. It's the same thing when people talk about New York versus LA. I'm like, I'm bored. Both cities are great. Real Housewives is great. But if it's not where you live, then I'm not going to shit on Game of Thrones. I'm sure they threw that baby into the fire, apparently. And
don't make me a don't Game make of you Thrones, a Game of Thrones gay, girl. Please. I'm like Emily in Paris, and that's it right now.
I'm on a strict Emily in Paris diet. Which, by the way, we can connect on that because inject that into my veins. That was veins in French.
That was very French.
Well, the full circle is that Sutton Strack last night, one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, was by far the nicest Real Housewife I've encountered and maybe one of the nicest famous people I've encountered. I'll tell you why she was so nice is because, of course, we were in a sad line of gay people trying to get a picture with her.
Right.
And then instead of her, well, here's what really happened, is that a couple, straight couple, were taking too much time. They were talking to her and clearly taking too much time. There was a line of 25 people. Sutton Strack, to her credit, said some jokes like, okay, you guys, get out of here. And kind of like, oh, just get it. And she did it in a really funny, but then they got the picture that they needed to keep it moving. And then the line started moving again.
Wow.
I went up to the girlies from the press company taking pictures. I was like, that is how you do it. What Sutton just did, that is how you do it. And then we got up to there. Matt and I said a quick hello, introduced ourselves, took the photo. And then she says to me, Eric, Matt, I'm so glad I got to meet you. I hope you enjoy the movie. Like, did not need to say our names back to us, did not need to pretend that she cared. And but she I felt like she genuinely cared.
Right.
And that is a very good famous person. And I will be a slut until the day I die.
Wow. That's actually a beautiful, I learned a few things in that one. I like the get out of here. I'm going to use that in regular conversation with people.
Get out of here.
Like, okay, go leave. That's incredible. I love when someone does repeat a name. I think that matters.
Oh my God.
It really does make you feel valued. Same.
It's hard. Names are hard.
It makes me panic.
Well, did you hear me literally before we press record be like, I've heard your name 35 times, but am I saying Joe Hedges correctly?
it's that feeling every time. I'm like, I hope I did it right. Hope I got it.
I know. And then you like wake up at 3 a.m. just like, Hedges, right? Hedges.
Right.
I do need to ask you the next podcast question, because whenever I connect with a guest like this, I just forget what I'm doing. But Joe Hedges, if the world was ending and you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
This is the question I was Googling before. I was almost going to chat GPT this one, because I was like, I don't have, like, there's almost like
I'm dying to know what chat GPT would have told you.
I'm sure they would have immediately been like, Jennifer Coolidge, which like might be my answer, which I'm like pissed about, because I want it to be more unique than that.
And don't be pissed. Look into the mirror and say, Joe Hedges loves Jennifer Coolidge, and that is organic. It is real, and it is you.
But it's become something other than just loving Jennifer Coolidge. Like, it's become, I feel like, a brand identity for people, which I refuse to partake in. Like, if I'm gonna love Jennifer Coolidge, it's gonna be in like an alternative way. Like, it's gonna be all about a Cinderella story and nothing to do with White Lotus at all.
You're not very pretty, and you're not very bright. That's actually a big distinction that I think
Thank you.
The listeners and myself appreciate.
I like it, Matt, and I loved her in White Lotus, but I don't need to celebrate her work. I don't think anyone needs to celebrate that work any longer. Like, she got the flowers for it.
She got the flowers. She got the literal award. And I think we should now go back to quoting, we could talk or not talk for hours and still have something to talk about. Like, I think we can go back to the OGs.
Yeah, that was also, you also do a really good impression. I would try mine, but I like panic with the, I panic doing an impression, but I do think in my head it's good.
By the way, I'm sure it's good and I want you to do it, but let me just tell you for a second that I ran away from the identity of someone who can do a good Jennifer Coolidge, because, and I'm going to out him right now because I love him so much and I think that this is fine. Benito Skinner, Benny Drama, did a video or a bit that every gay person thinks they can do a Jennifer Coolidge.
Right.
And ever since he said that, because I love him so much, I'm like, he's right. I'm trash. Never gonna do the out in the world, but it happened organically. So, Joe Hedges, I want you to feel safe right now.
I'm not gonna do it.
To attempt.
I'm not gonna do it. Like, that's the boundary. That's where I draw the line. Like, I refuse to on command do a Jennifer Coolidge impression. It just like.
And by the way, I'm gonna respect the boundary, but now let's go into the fear. What is your fear that it's going to be just so bad?
I like, this is my second therapy session of the day. Like, this, and it's in the exact same setup. The fear is that, I think it's, and it comes back to the delusion. The fear is that I'm so delusioned and I'm going to make a noise that has no remote correlation to. I tried doing a Cher.
I'll be
impression.
Like, wait, was that Kermit? Oh, Cher. Do you do Cher?
No, I like just listened back to, because like, I did it on an episode of the pod and I was just editing it and I heard myself doing it and I was like, what am I doing right now? Like, I didn't even register that I was trying to do a Cher impression until I took a second to like remember what we were talking about. Like, so, but in my head it was spot on. And that's what worries me.
Did you keep it in the episode or did you edit it?
It's in the episode. It's on Patreon though, so it's behind a paywall. So it's safe.
And that is what we call a business man.
Exactly.
And that is also strategy.
It was huge.
I don't know. Can I do a Cher impression? I'm gonna try one because I can edit this out if I want. Here we go. Well, obviously she's like, snap out of it, but I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna do what should I order as Cher?
Can you
what food or
can you order like a double cheeseburger and a strawberry milkshake?
Now I'm scared. Okay, I'm gonna do it. double cheeseburger and a strawberry milkshake.
Why am I scared?
I feel very vulnerable right now. Okay, here I go. I'm sweating. Here I go.
You know. It's really good. Keep going. Don't stop.
I'm going to get a double cheeseburger. Okay, I'm done. And now I need to change my shirt.
I'm also sweating profusely. Like, that really did something.
Why
to
are we sweating?
Well. I'm like,
it's
nervous.
Because we're seeing it. We're looking into a mirror, and we're now having ourselves do the most vulnerable thing, and it's hard. But I applaud. Let's give ourselves applause.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll do it here.
Clapping his back. I mean, shoulder.
Yeah, I felt what you felt in that moment, and I can only blame myself for even bringing up that impression would give me anxiety, because I think that you would have been...
No, don't say that, because we needed to do this for each other to take us out of our comfort zone.
We did.
And I'm glad it happened. There, I said it.
I'm glad that you did it. I think it'd be so much worse if you just, like, said never mind, like I did. I think that would be such a worse situation, so I'm really proud
of you. Well, by the way, I'm proud of you, because you knew that you weren't protecting yourself by saying it. And I fully right now just know I did a bad share, but I think that the failures make us the successes. And so you heard it here first, Joe. I'm going to keep it in.
I'm so happy to hear that. I can't wait to listen back to it. That's going to be my main takeaway.
Cut to me editing. And I'm like, I take 10 minutes. Yeah.
It's an you look at our episode.
Yeah. It's a 12 minute. You're like, wait a minute. Didn't we record for just about a full hour? Wow. Okay, since we're getting towards the end, I want to make sure I have to ask all the questions that I have. Can you really quickly tell me, did you go to Catholic school?
I did. I went to Catholic high school.
Okay, I remember hearing that. What was it like being a gay person? Were you told you were going to burn in hell?
It was like, they were kind of PC about it. They weren't like so outwardly like, this is going to be the end of the world. But it was, they like were more like, if anyone in this room might be gay, you gotta share a voice, snap out of it. Like, it was that feeling. Like, I remember having a theology nun teacher who went missing in Austria. Literally, God rest her soul, went missing in Austria and was never seen never found. One day I'm going to bring justice for Sister Eileen. I think it's a crazy thing that happened, but
not enough people are talking about Sister Eileen.
No one is, except for me and my three friends who still speak to me from high school. But Sister Eileen once said, everyone gets homosexual thoughts. We all do. And when I get them, I just take a very cold shower. And like, that was the kind of lessons that were being taught. So Sister Eileen, LGBTQIA icon, missing. Her two headlines.
Literally, we'll be pitching to every network to pick this up. Sister Eileen, confirmed lesbian at large.
At large.
In Austria.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the Austrian police, like, just gave up. They said, we can't look anymore.
Joe, what do you think happened to her?
There's a reality, and then there's a love your Owala. I just abandoned mine last week, I'm sorry to say. But there's a reality, and there's a dream. For Sister Eileen, the dream is that she found a lover, ran away. Yeah.
Took the habit off. Yeah.
And she's just so happy. The reality is that she drowned in a very cold lake. And that's what the authorities believe happened. But they have no confirmation. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Why do they think that?
I don't know. There was like a lake near the premise, but they searched the lake and they couldn't find her. But they were like, this is probably what happened. It's like,
she
crazy.
Was having such lesbian thoughts. She needed a freezing cold lake.
Oh my God. Wait, I hadn't even drawn the connection between the cold shower.
She lived
and the cold
as she
lake.
Died. She Taking lived a as cold she died. Shower. Thinking about scissoring.
Yeah. Rest in peace. That
Can
sucks.
We? Let's have, yeah. Rest, Amonis, or she is thriving on a farm,
which
with lesbian her
lesbian lover. Yeah, I hope it's that one.
I love you, Sister Eileen. I really do. I want you to know we forgive you.
She changed my life. She really did.
Wow, Sister Eileen.
Yeah, that you didn't expect that as your answer for how
no,
Catholic
it's
school.
It's 100 times better. I mean, and honestly, like. Where's the True Crime Doc? Max is missing out.
Ryan Murphy starring Jennifer Coolidge. Just make it easy for everyone. Just do it. I'm sorry.
And then it cuts to you doing an impression as Jennifer Coolidge, and then you get fully, your career is wiped.
It's over.
Because it was so bad. Well, listen, I need to sadly end this conversation by asking you the famous final question you were not prepped on, which is Joe Hedges. What is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God. That's such a scary question for someone like me who I can't name a Whoopi Goldberg film in the current moment. But I'm going to say, I have two ideas. I almost need to confirm before I say it. I'm Googling it. I'm sorry. I need to do this.
Do it. I support you.
Because, why am I no, Whoopi Goldberg's not in this movie, which she fully is. It's a Whoopi Goldberg movie.
Oh, I'm dying for you to say a movie that Whoopi is not in.
I did say something completely off base.
You're National Treasure?
It's it's going to be Sister Act 2. It's not my
answer. That's my favorite movie of all time.
Really?
Yes. And I was worried that you were going to waffle and that you were going to try to be something that you weren't. But I think that's the answer that was meant to be said.
It was.
And it's the perfect answer.
It was in my gut, but I wanted to be different. But I was wrong about it.
Remember the seed?
The seed that's been in my gut. That seed is deep in my gut. And it was Sister Act 2 the whole time. Yeah.
If we zoom in on your gut seed, it's going, oh, happy day. You're back in the habit. And just like Sister Eileen, you are a gay icon. Joe, thank you for coming on. Congrats on 1 year of Good Children.
Thank you.
I know this is the start of a beautiful relationship. And I want to ask you, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at JoeHegYes. And you can find Good Children across all platforms at Good Children Pod. And I'm also on TikTok, but it's fine.
Your TikTok is iconic. And by the way, their episode with Julia Fox that just came out is so good. And it's just the fucking beginning. Mazel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the incredible, the stunning, the sweet, the hilarious Joe Hedges. I'm so grateful he came on and excited to do more fun things with Andrew, Joe, the Good Children fam, and you. Which, speaking of, the tickets will be on sale this week for the New York show June 29th, the LA show June 15th, and that link is also in the description for the Patreon. You can watch the entire live show that had Brian Safi, Greta Teitelman, Brandon Kyle Goodman, Jared Goldstein, the IMHO drag queens, and more. So check that out at patreon.com/gayasspodcast and leave that 5-star review saying what you like about armpits. Have a great rest of your week. I love you.
Life is a workout. And Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.